Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. It's your casual comics guy, Joe, and we have a special show for you today where we are hooked on a feeling.
Hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in.
It's hard to think, Mark, that this was almost 10 years ago that the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out. We were first introduced to Rocket Raccoon, who did not care to be called a raccoon at the time. Groot, like a tree monster. And it's like, do you remember when that trailer first came out for the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie? And you're like, what was your reaction to that?
My first reaction was, I don't know what direction they're taking the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but if they can pull it off, I'm going to be really happy. And I was really happy because it was a departure from, hey, it's not Thor, it's not Captain America, it's not Iron Man.
Like, right.
What are you going to do with that?
They were kind of going down the roster of the Avengers, and then this is the first, like, where they're like, here's a wild thing. Most people, like, as obscure as Iron Man, quote unquote, was at the beginning, like, comic book fans, what I understand for the most part, didn't really grasp Iron Man like they grasped Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I did as a comic book fan. But even as a comic book fan, I'm like, Guardians of the Galaxy, I know of them, but I don't know much about them. And it was a huge risk.
I think it was, too. I think it creatively, it was a huge risk because they were not beloved by other than a niche comic book market. And even then you were like, all I remembered is this rocket with guns and a guy and a weird big tree guy. Like, that's all I really remember. right. And the Star-Lord guy, I didn't even really know who he was other than a character every once in a while. But I just thought there were oddball characters that only certain really obscure Marvel fans liked. I didn't like or dislike them. I just didn't know who they were.
I wasn't even really a fan of the Marvel space stuff, like the Nova Corps and all those things that happened in space were kind of like,
Same here. Yeah. And I'm like, I'll watch Buck Rogers or Star Trek if I want that. Like, I don't need to see it in Marvel.
Right. So huge risk. And then here we are 9 years later, 3 years, the Guardians played a huge role in, you know, a lot of other movies, including Infinity War, where, you know, they're like a linchpin in the Infinity War.
Right. Yeah. And Endgame. Yes.
So end of an era, man. How do you feel about the end of an era for Guardians?
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the recap, but very satisfied, like just happy, you know, enjoy the journey. Right. I mean, I'm really happy about what they did there. And I'm kind of bummed because I thought James Gunn did an amazing job with all three movies. I just feel satisfied. You know, like, that was a yummy meal. I feel good and full.
Right.
How about you?
Right. Same. I mean, like, I think the series had its ups and downs, and it wasn't until after reflecting going into Guardians 3 that I realized how much of the Guardians story happened outside of their movies, which surprised me a little bit. Like, everybody that I know remembers Teenage Groot. And I didn't remember that that's not in any of the Guardians movies. That's in other movies.
Right.
Kind of cool. I liked it. So we're going to talk today, Guardians of the Galaxy 3. If we have time at the end, we'll chat through other Marvel trilogies and how we might rate those. But I don't want to waste too much time. Let's get right into Guardians of the Galaxy 3 recap when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We could do this all day.
I'm so sorry about this, Yura.
Oh, please.
We're here to save the life of our friend. That is all. We paid her to help us get in and get out. You'd think that'd mean, I'm going to help you do it in a way that no one knows it's happening. But no, what she means is I'm going to shoot people, threaten people's lives. And I know you're probably asking, why would I trust her? Well, that's a good question. The answer is, we used to be in love. Yeah, she was my girlfriend, only she doesn't remember it because it wasn't her. Because her dad threw her off a magic cliff and she died, and then I lost my temper and nearly destroyed half the universe. And she came back out of the past. There she is. Everyone else who died in the past stayed dead. Not her. Why? Was it the magic cliff? I don't know. That's some freaking Infinity Stone scientist. And some dumbass Earth dude who met a girl, fell in love. That girl died. And then came back a total dick.
You left out some important information, but that is the gist of it.
That kind of is the gist of it. That's like really everything you need to know before you start watching Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Oh my god. I love how in that, Joe, also, because fans obsess over this stuff, which I think is great because I do too, but what he talked about with the Magic Cliff and the Infinity Stone stuff, he addresses what people would characterize as plot holes. They're like, wait a minute, how can Gamora be alive but all the other people not? And he explains it. He's like, it's, you can't explain it. He fell off a magic cliff and an Infinity Stone sign. He's like, I'm not an Infinity Stone sign. It's like how they would explain it to a fan. It's like, it was a magic cliff. It's magic.
Right.
And I'm not an Infinity Stone scientist, so I don't know.
It's like, I'm a big Mystery Science Theater fan, and it reminds me of the opening theme song of that. Like, if you're wondering how he eats and breathes and other science facts, just repeat to yourself, it's just a show. I should really just relax. It's like,
yes, yes.
Worried about all of this stuff. Just hang with us. It doesn't, like, it's just the magic cliff. And it's the, yes. And I know if you go, you will find all of the explanations for the time travel and why she can exist and why she doesn't have her, like, through the hot, yep, the time heist and everything. But it, that, like, that doesn't matter because they're telling a story with a great emotional core, which I think is what came through to me. And we, you know, we'll talk about it in the recap, but like, this was an emotional movie.
Yes. But, yes.
When I boiled it down, go ahead.
This was more of a detour, sidetrack, Joe, to your point around that. Everybody was talking about Endgame, about plot holes within Captain America going back and pruning all the branches, you know, and putting,
right,
like, who cares about that? I want to see a movie about that. Like, that'd be a cool story. I don't care about what happened. I want to see the movie about that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, just enjoy it. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, Joe.
No, it's great stuff, and it's all tied together. I think it's hard to isolate this as a movie by itself, as much as it does probably stand, you know. I think to casual fans, I don't think you have to know everything going into it, because really it doesn't matter. What matters is the story here. And as I started to try and break down the plot so we could talk about it, it's really not a very complicated plot. It's just got some big set pieces to it that are a lot of fun to talk about. And so we'll probably get into some of the details on the set pieces, but the movie, I mean, it starts with a flashback to Rocket, and you know, just it's a really terrifying intro almost with baby raccoons, and then and the way James Gunn uses music is amazing, because it opens with Rocket, and I think it's a remake of Radiohead's Creep, of him just, he doesn't fit in, and this is really Rocket's story. Which is interesting, because when you think about it, he's not an active participant in much of the action until the end.
Yes. Yes. I remember reading early on when James Gunn said he wanted to finish the trilogy when he got ousted and there was that whole thing and he was going to come back. And he said, I really wanted to finish up the trilogy because I needed to tell Rocket's story.
Right.
And I remember filing that away in my head and not thinking about it, not reading about this show or movie. And then when they first cut to that first scene, Joe, that you're talking about, that reminded me of what James Gunn said of what he wanted to tell. And he just brilliantly starts telling it. And, yeah, and he pulls you in emotionally of like, this is what it's going to be about. We'll put all the other stuff that fans enjoy in here, but this is what the show is. This is what this movie is going to be about, to wrap this up, and how the definition of family and all these characters, but it centers around Rocket.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, it's a movie about family, and it starts with the Guardians being broken. You know, Peter's right, mourning the loss of Gamora, because he's so broken. They're kind of leaderless, and they're setting up their headquarters on nowhere. And I mean, even the name of the place they're at is Nowhere. Right?
That's kind of
telling, is that they're just, they're lost, and they're all, they found a family, but they're adrift because Peter himself is so busted up. And then immediately, crisis, introduction of Adam Warlock, who I would love to know. What did you think of Adam Warlock? I mean, well, it's because you didn't know much about him from the comics, right?
I didn't. I did not. And again, I think it was very complimentary to the story that he wanted to tell. And he even gave Adam Warlock his own mini story arc in a movie, which is not easy to do. So that is probably the only, I'm not even going to call it a criticism. That's the only thing I had, is that felt rushed, but it had to be because of what they did with the story. But I liked him as a character. I like how they played up of, they kind of made mention of, he got brought out of his cocoon too early. So he was still just a child with all these powers. And it kind of comes across again and again in the movie, which is hilarious. But I like who portrayed it. I like the story of Adam Warlock. So again, felt a bit rushed, but can't be perfect.
It's interesting because your introduction of the comic is just him blasting through Nowhere, grabbing Rocket, fighting the Guardians, and you like understand immediately how powerful he is.
Yep.
Because he's able to like best the Guardians who are all fighting him. They manage to come together, but Rocket's in mortal danger now. And they find that there's a ticking time bomb in his heart if they try and help him, which then propels the plot forward, which is, we have to go and save Rocket. And that's the driving force of the movie going forward. There's not
that brings them all together. Yeah.
It's not a super complex plot, which I like because it gives it so much breathing room for character development, because every character gets a really nice arc in the movie too. It's hard to introduce Adam Warlock and give each of the characters more development. That's crazy that they're able to juggle that.
Yeah. I mean, what do you got? Six main characters?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. Meanwhile, you have to carry a story along. So I agree with you. A very, I'll call it, timeless plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have to introduce like a threat element besides Adam Warlock,
right?
Which is the High Evolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Again, brilliantly played.
Yeah,
and did an amazing job given what he needed to do with his limited time because of all the other character development. So they stuffed a lot in there and it was so well done, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah. There's some big themes in there, and I didn't like, because of the way the story is told, a lot of flashbacks, it's like, how do you then have like a plot recap? But I mean, I'd love to talk about like Rocket's through story and his backstory because it's tragic, but at the same time it gives him that heroic arc to be like, you understand in a different way, because if you stitch the flashbacks together into a scene, it's, he was experimented on, and it's a weird parallel to Guardians. He found his own family. All these animals had been crafted by the High Evolutionary, and he finds his friends and he's like, in the middle of all of this misery, I'm going to stick with this family, which is almost where he is at the beginning of the movie. Everybody's like misery. Everything's miserable, but he's with that family, and just how this group of animals that has been experimented on and is like living a terrible life has hope. Even in the middle of that, because they have a friendship, and some of those scenes, even though they're tragic, are extremely playful and joyful, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I definitely got some Toy Story vibes.
Right?
Right? Of like, why am I getting so emotional about these animals that are talking and walking, you know? And you felt a connection to them because you had this deep connection with Rocket in the movies of he, and then you realize, and you bring in all the other things of why he sticks with the Guardians. And it's so important to him, but he never really wants to talk about it directly in current time. And it's because he doesn't, and why he protects him so much, like he can't have that happen to him again emotionally. And that's what he's trying to protect with mm-hmm. all these things. And it actually makes, if you think about it, when you got emotional in volume one of Groot essentially dying, it mm-hmm. just makes it that much more heart-wrenching seeing this movie. And then if you go back, I haven't watched one, two since three, but if I did, I would just be more emotional about right. Groot protecting them to save the Guardians at the end of one. Oh my gosh. Right, Joe? It'd just be so much more emotional now, which is right. great.
Yeah. So Rocket then grows up in this place with this hope that he is going to help the High Evolutionary in creating this next generation of anthropomorphs that yeah. are going to be evolved. And it shows immediately how smart he was. He's like the only creation, and they that's like the powerful, that's what drives it forward. That's why they're looking for him. And so like, he's the only one who's had independent thought and creativity, that he's like, how did something I created know and think of something I couldn't know and think of myself? Which yes. is crazy in itself when you think of that's what parenthood really is.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, you right. have kids and you're like, how do they know things and think of things that I didn't know? And that's the twisted nature of the High Evolutionary. And his downfall is he can't understand that creating something better than yourself is the ultimate triumph.
Right. Right. And letting them grow and be their own person, as it were, right. is the whole point of family and life. But he couldn't get over that of like, there can't be that. And then he was like conflicted because he's like, we got to find this thing that knows it. And it's like, you don't need to do that anymore. Just right. figure it out for yourself almost. But he was obsessed with it. And probably because of that, you know, if they had more time to dig deeper into that character, he probably was in a warped way really connected to Rocket because of that. He was unique.
Right.
And it's like, well, they were all unique, but he was more unique. And so that's what kind of warped his thinking and his obsession into finding him. Yeah. So he wanted to break him apart and find out what it was that got created there. And instead of the whole point of just enjoy it, man.
Right. You don't need to recreate it. You already created it.
Right.
And it's not going to be perfect. And there's a lot of lines that I'm sure in the movie seem deep. And if you analyze them, people will pick them apart. But it is that where Rocket finally tells me, he's like, you weren't trying to make the world perfect. You just didn't want things to be the way they were. And you're just breaking things.
Right.
And yep. that is part of human nature, is like, mm-hmm. how much of it is I'm tinkering things because I want them to be better, and how much of it is just I'm not happy with the world. And so I'm just going right. to wreck stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think I loved how you, I think an interesting, what I took away from the movie was an interesting subplot, which was, I think they somehow mentioned how these characters they created, that their default setting was nice and nonviolent.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but there was still some stuff you see in Rocket about tinkering with things and hoarding things that aren't evil, but it's just, like you said, it was his personality. But then that traumatic sequence of him losing his family, that default setting had a limit, right? It was like, nope, like you could have a default setting and you can program somebody to be nonviolent, but there are traumatic things that could happen that flip him to an extremely violent person or thing.
Right. It's interesting. It's how much of that, of him hoarding stuff, because that is a big part of the plot, is you see, even before anything traumatic, he's just got the sticky fingers. He's going to grab stuff. And at one point, the High Evolutionary tells him, he's like, you were smart enough to figure out this whole transformation process, but you couldn't figure out that you weren't going to this new world. And it's like, maybe subconsciously he knew that. And that's why he was grabbing stuff, even though he didn't know why he was doing it, because he had everything in his cage to put together to make a key to get out. And it's almost like, how much of that was he knew deep down what was going on. And so he was mm-hmm. subconsciously getting the stuff he needed, versus the other explanation, which is, I just randomly grabbed a bunch of stuff and I could put it together into a key that would get us out of here in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it'd be great to find out what the director thought, but I'd like
James Gunn lies to me all the time.
That's right.
That guy has lied to me to my face on Twitter. Not to my face, to my virtual avatar face.
Is there a story there?
Yeah.
No, he did?
Yeah. So how about this? We'll take a quick break. I'll tell you the James Gunn story of how he lied to me, and then we'll finish up Rocket's backstory when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We could do this all day.
And I miss you so much. And maybe if you open yourself up to it, there's a possibility.
I don't think so, Quinn.
Quill.
I don't think so.
Well, what I'm trying to say is...
Peter, you know this is an open line, right?
What?
We're listening to everything you're saying.
And it is painful.
And you're just telling me now?
We were hoping it would stop on its own.
But I switched it over to private.
What color button did you push?
Blue! For the blue suit!
Oh, no.
Blue is the open line for everyone.
Orange is for blue.
What?
Black is for orange. Yellow is for green. Green is for red, and red is for yellow.
No, yellow is for yellow. Green is for red, red is for green.
I don't think so.
Try it then.
Hello!
You were right.
Another moment with the Guardians where it's kind of fun. That's what I actually think is great about James Gunn and the way he's pitched this is like, it is a moment that is both moving, deeply tragic, and then just at the right moment undercut by humor to let you off the hook a little bit and give you a little bit of relief.
Totally agree.
So back to the story of James Gunn, there's this whole still thing out there where he is saying that there is an Easter egg in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 that no one has found yet. And I wrote a whole blog post, if you go to casualcomicsguy.com, I'm sure you can find it, that is in the collector's workshop. In the first Guardians of the Galaxy, you can clearly see in the background the Toxic Avenger from Troma Films, which is where James Gunn got his start, working on Troma Films. Lloyd Kaufman, head of Troma Films, has a cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy. It is a mutant dude with his back to the camera with a mop. That is the Toxic Avenger. There was a Marvel Toxic Avenger comic in the 80s. This is clearly the Easter egg. I posted that, and he said, that's not the Toxic Avenger in the background. He didn't say who it was. He didn't say why it looked like him. He just said, that's not it. And I'm like, you are a liar. You probably don't want to get in trouble and have to pay for using the Toxic Avenger in the movie by admitting that was him.
Right. That's right. That's totally right.
So back to
back
to Rocket's story, though, right? We were talking about a little bit of that tragedy and how he interacted with the High Evolutionary. He does finally... Right. He unlocks the whole key to bringing these evolutionary things to the point where they can be peaceful and head to this new world that's been promised to them. And he's told, you're not destined for that. And then immediately in classic bad guy fashion, the High Evolutionary says, in front of Rocket, incinerate them all and cut his brain out. What does he think Rocket's going to do at that point?
Well, I think that's the point around. I think he felt the default setting couldn't be changed.
Right.
He's like, this is a nonviolent thing. I control him. He can't control himself. Like, he's not going to turn violent and break bad.
Right.
And that was the mistake with the High Evolutionary, right? He had the God complex, you know, God complex 101.
Right.
And he miscalculated.
Yeah, that was the tragic flaw. Well, not even tragic with the High Evolutionary. That was his Achilles heel. He couldn't comprehend that something he created could do something unexpected to him.
Right. And like you said, he should have just stopped with Rocket because you did it. It's like, dude, you did it.
Right.
Like, you achieved true creation.
Yeah.
Instead, he wanted to figure out how he did it. He was obsessed with how I did it. It's like, don't worry about that. You have a kid, like true ingenuity right there. And he couldn't see for what it was. It's like he couldn't accept it, to your point. It's like, no, this is a raccoon that I created and that's it. Like, I can't accept that.
Yeah.
That a lesser being than me can actually be better than me.
And that
have more free thought.
That piece in the flashback where Rocket does, I mean, it's a huge set piece. Like we talked about, where he goes back, he assembles the key, he unlocks his cage, he unlocks the cages, and then Lila gets shot and dies, and he freaks out. And to me, that was one of the few times watching a Marvel movie that I've like felt like terror almost. The way that that plays out, where Rocket then attacks the High Evolutionary, and in the background, Flora is like screaming, we got to get out of here. And Rocket can't stop himself from shredding this dude's face. And it was horrifying.
Yeah, it was very emotional. That was a very emotional scene there. Because you even knew, kind of like you talked about with Rocket, and that's the Toy Story vibe. Like, you knew this wasn't going to end well. Because these characters aren't around anymore.
Right.
It's so almost like but you didn't want to accept it. And then when it actually happened, I cried. I got really emotional. And it's because, like you said, I knew it was going to happen. I didn't want to accept it. I'm like, I'm not going to accept it because I know it's going to happen. And then it happens and then you get all emotional. And like you said, it was a very emotional sequence and set piece.
Yeah. Holy cow. It tore me up. And it is. Well, you're right. It's like reading like a Of Mice and Men or something like that, where you're like, from the very beginning, you're like, this is not going to end well. And you know it's coming, but that doesn't stop the gut punch when it happens anyway.
Yes. Yes.
Holy cow. I can't even hardly talk about it. It was emotional. So
yeah,
Rocket has his arc there. The one thing that did occur to me is because what saved their lives is him just randomly hoarding this technology stuff. That is that part of his obsession with like getting the dude's prosthetic leg and then getting the Winter Soldier's arm and stuff like that. He doesn't need it, but just in case. I'm going to have it over here.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think that's great. I think you're right. I think he's just, that's part of his personality now. If I hoard things and I may need them and I may not, but I don't care.
So it is a hard movie to recap like linear, but if you think of it like that as Rocket's arc, where then he eventually does finally, and that's like a cheer in the theater moment where he's like, Rocket Raccoon. He's finally like, he knows where he came from and he's like not denying his past anymore. He's like, this is what made me what I am. And he has seen his friends in the afterlife, which again is another huge emotional moment. Where she tells him, you know, there's the hands that create and the hands that guide the creator. It's like, oh my gosh, this is some deep stuff. And then you get silliness too. I think the other characters all had their arcs too, right? So you got Star-Lord, he's got his arc with Gamora, which how satisfying did you find that payoff?
Well, I thought they prioritize the right thing, which is Peter still can't go back to Earth and he should go back to Earth. And that was a deeper cut than Gamora. So the fact that they you had to like sit down and say, what is the not the better story, but for Peter Quill, what would he do? And it's like, yeah, he's in love. He was in love with this person, but he has to accept that that's over.
Right.
And the hole that he needs to fill is kind of coming to grips with the regret of never actually going back and visiting his grandfather.
Right.
And so the reason I bring that up is because I think that in turn created a nice story into the Gamora and Star-Lord, like, if you will.
Their chapter of the story. It's interesting because as dumb and as silly as these movies can appear to be, they don't spoon feed you things. You have to like piece it together yourself a little bit. And I think you're dead on there in that the easy thing to do would have just been Gamora to fall in love with him again and then be a happy couple. But at the one point she's screaming at him, she's like, I don't know what is wrong with you that you need me to be this person. And what's wrong with him is he never healed the scars of his mother dying and his grandfather yelling at him and then getting kidnapped with no closure there. And so his story arc has to end with going back and healing the original trauma so that he doesn't need this person to fulfill him.
Yeah, right. And he doesn't even really care what version of that person is, like Gamora. He's just, and then he, because the joke he's seen is he's looking at Nebula, and he's like, she's like, stop looking at me like that.
There are some really funny moments. There is. It's like, and even the it's couched in humor. It's when Mantis convinces Drax to go talk to him about the metaphor. I'm capable of metaphor, but it's like women are lily pads. You keep hopping. You need to learn to swim, and that's a joke when they're talking about it because Drax is couching it as he doesn't know how to tell a metaphor. But that's true. That is what needs to happen. And Mantis, as his sister, saw it. And in true family fashion, you never listen to your siblings. They can't be smarter than you. Right. So she has tried to convince Drax to go talk to him, but he knows the gig is up. Metaphor. Is it? Analogy.
I know. It's great writing.
That's one of my top great writing. You could probably go back and pick 100 lines from a movie. One of my top. It's got to be like top three. When he's like, I pooped and it looked like a fish. Even my butt is capable of metaphors.
I know. You're just like, what are you saying?
Is there a better comedy duo in the Marvel universe than Mantis and Drax?
Oh, that's a good one, Joe. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't think so. And just a random thing, it's the first F-bomb in the Marvel universe, Cinematic Universe.
Oh, there you go.
It's in the most unlikeliest of places.
That's hilarious.
I was just like, whoa. I'm like, they actually, because they have some PG-13 movies, right? And you can have one F-bomb in there, right? And they never did, and they used it, and it
broke the seal.
It was great. I thought it was just awesome.
So yeah, I really like the way Peter and Gamora's stories tie up, because it would have been cliche to have them get together. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, Groot and the other characters, Mantis, and it'll get into sort of how it ends. Then we can talk about what were our favorite set pieces in the movie, because there's just some things that are just hilarious to talk about that happened through the film. But we'll talk about those when we return.
Great Caesar's Ghost! You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
Drax, stay here with Rocket. Watch him, that's who they're coming for.
I want to come.
No, Mantis, watch Drax.
Groot, you know what to do with these.
Push down on it.
What?
Push it down.
I am pushing down on it.
Push the button. It looks like you're pushing the keyhole.
The what?
There's a button under the handle. Press that in.
Okay. Now what?
Open the door.
That is a stupid design. And your instructions were very unclear.
You ask for it, and there it is, Mark. The first step in the Marvel Universe.
Great minds think alike, Joe. That was great.
That was good. So we were just talking about the character arcs, and we talked about Rocket, who's, you know, this is definitely his movie. You get a lot from Gamora and Star-Lord, and even Drax and Mantis end up in a different place than they start, which is fascinating to me too. I really love the way they pay off Drax with, you're not a destroyer, you're a dad, because that's obviously been his story the whole time, right? He loses his daughter. It takes a long time to pay off. And Mantis, you don't get to know much about, but it's cool how the family comes together, because she's like the glue that kind of holds the family together. And again, there's serious, serious things that happen, and they get undercut by humor, which is when they're arguing, Nebula shoves Drax. And she's like, you're mad at everything all the time, but that doesn't mean you can push him. And they're fighting about whether she pushed him or not. And then they're arguing about whether he's dumb. And Nebula's like, or Mantis is like, he is dumb. He's stupid. But he makes us laugh. He loves us all. And he's the only one of us that doesn't hate himself. And that like is some deep character insight of what his role has been throughout like the course of this family, what his position is. He's not hating himself. He's making everybody laugh. He's unconditionally just caring for everybody. He might not be the smartest. And then he gets his feelings hurt so bad by that. He's like, is that what you really think? And even though at the beginning of the film, she says you can't use your powers on people who you love, she erases his memory of it because she knows she hurt him.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yep. And it is his story arc around the dad of what you realize he's actually the dad in Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dad, you know, like, you know, you're a dad. I mean, the family picks on you. They know it's a term of endearment. You don't get upset about it, but they occasionally do hurt you and that feels bad, but yeah. You're there to protect everybody. And you're the most, you're supposed to be the most grounded.
Yeah.
And that's what he is. So he is the dad and the Guardians, and at the end, that's his calling.
Yeah. And he understands that because he is a dad at heart, which it's interesting that you say that because I mean, it occurs like when you have kids, as the dad, that's probably the scariest person in the house, the biggest, mm-hmm. loudest, like most frightening. And it occurred to me with my kids that it didn't take much for my kids to get, like, if I would raise my voice for them to get scared. And Drax is, right. He's the biggest dude. He can be the scariest, but he's the one that recognizes when Nebula's yelling at the kids, he's like, you're scaring them. And he starts to act goofy to defuse mm-hmm. the situation. Yep. And that is like a total dad thing to do, which is, yeah, go ahead, laugh at me. Think I'm funny. Think I'm less than whatever, because it makes you feel not threatened and safe. Right. So,
and they make his superpowers, if you will, they're a manifestation of what your kids think about their dad, which is you're invulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's his, like he's near invulnerable, and that's really what your kids think about their dad, of like he can't be hurt,
right?
And that's Drax's power. He can't be hurt, right?
Right.
And when he gets truly hurt by Mantis, she erases it because she's like, all right, that was too far. But you're right, that's when you never really realize it until his story arc finished about his true calling is being a dad.
Yeah.
Drax the dad, not Drax the destroyer.
Right.
And it's a great wrap up for his story.
I think they got it absolutely right with Drax.
Mm-hmm.
Groot's the one who gets a little shortchanged, I think, of everybody, but he already had his big moment in the first movie. He did. You referenced it, right?
And Nebula did in the second.
Right.
To your point, in terms of story arc. So they could have shortchanged it a bit because of that.
Yeah. And, yep. You know, and they wrap it up nice where it's like Groot's part of it a little bit is the, I am Groot constantly. And it's Gamora becomes part of the family again, when she understands what he's saying, not just hearing mm-hmm. I am Groot anymore. So it's a cool way to tie that off. There's mm-hmm. a couple other side characters that I think are interesting. Kraglin. I don't know. What was your overall impression of Kraglin?
Well, I think,
you brother know, of James Gunn.
That's still, when you told me that, I was like, really? And it makes sense when you see him running.
Right. No, run dumber. I don't want you looking cool in any way on screen.
That's right. Again, I thought he was a good, like, NPC.
Right.
I thought he was a good character. They wanted to have somebody in there. And if you think about his story arc too, he looked up to Yondu, and so he was trying to be like Yondu.
Yeah.
And they even brought him in at the end, right? So Yondu with a cameo. So I loved how they played that character.
Yondu gets his use the force Luke moment.
He does.
It ties back to the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which is now probably one of the more meaningful standalone things you got to watch on Disney Plus if you want the whole Guardians character arc. Because that's where you get really the story family of how Peter and Kraglin were like brothers, and they had their own thing going with Yondu being their adopted dad.
Right, right.
He may be your father, but he ain't your daddy, boy.
That's right. Yeah, I liked it. I enjoyed. Well, we already talked about the holiday special. It was really well done. But yeah, it wraps up the trilogy really well with some the cartoon moments and then the non-cartoon moments. Yeah, it was really good.
And then the other big character that we would be really remiss, especially since I see your dog there, is Cosmo. Cosmo's like a new fan favorite. I love Cosmo. I think that's an amazing addition. I told you, I went to Anaheim to WonderCon this year, and I spent the day at the Disney theme park, and I went on the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, and when you go through the entrance to get into it, it's the collector's den there, and there is Cosmo in the tube. So Cosmo's mm-hmm. been in the Guardians movies for longer than people think.
That's right. That's right.
I love it. Only in this series.
Again, another NPC, right? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But it's only in this movie can you bring in a character that is a dog that got shot into space by the Russians in 1969, has a voice box and telekinetic powers, and somehow you care because that dog for the whole movie has the hurt feelings that Kraglin said she's a bad dog.
I know. I love those B stories. They were great. They were so well done.
True. So true. So any and we didn't even hardly talk about Adam Warlock, who's, like you said, he got his own little arc in the movie.
Yeah.
Terrifying because he's got almost unlimitless power, but the brain of like an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Rush piece of it, which again they had to go through, is, you know, he lost his mom essentially in the movie, and that makes him kind of realize family's important, and this Guardians group is a family, and he's like, I want to be a part of that, right. And so that was really great how he came around to that, and it was again rushed but extremely well done given the time constraints.
I like it. So we'll take another quick break. I mean, that, like I say, to me, the more important than the plot was just something to hang those character developments on. When we come back, maybe we can talk about a few standout moments from the film and then rank our Marvel trilogies, at least the top few of them, when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Let's go, but inconspicuously, through the window.
Did I look cool? I don't have any more sound clips from the movie, so I had to throw in my own quote.
I love it.
That look cool.
That's the gist of it.
So, oh, well, are there any moments that like we didn't talk about? There's so many, but any standouts that you're like, that was incredible, that's going to stick with me?
Yeah, Joe, I mean, I was thinking about that when we were prepping for this, and I think it maybe is the hallmark for me for a good movie. I can't pick one. There were so many good moments, beginning to end. You know, I would say the moment where they said they were all the animals,
yeah,
were celebrating that they're gonna go to a better place, and you knew in your head that wasn't gonna end well, but they all felt so much joy. I really felt connected to those characters, and that's what I was saying. The Toy Story moment was for me. Yeah. So that stuck out for me. You know, I would say the other one that stuck out for me was actually, as they were, there was a lot going on there, but when they were in that, I don't know what that was called, where that organic prison with Nathan Fillion,
right?
Like that whole sequence,
Orga Corp.
There was so, yes, Orga, thank you. There was so much going on there, but it was just, there were a lot of good moments in that sequence. So, you know, just the funny sequences, like you had the clip earlier, the coming together sequences. The other clip that you had was in that sequence, the elevator sequence of him summarizing the magic rock thing.
Right.
There was just a lot going on in that sequence, and so I would, that one stuck out to me. But a lot of good moments, but those are the two that stuck out for me. What about you?
Yeah, it's well paced. When you bring up Orga Corp, I think that's one of the things that I've appreciated about these movies. The humor is grounded in something relatable and something that is about people and people dealing with people, especially flawed people. And it was with Nathan Fillion, where like Drax is about to blow their cover, and he's like, sorry, his boss's nephew. And Nathan's like, yeah, I got one of those too. We all work with somebody who's only there, God knows why.
Yeah,
but they know protected. Somebody who knows somebody, and you just gotta put up with them because you can't do anything about it. Oh, I know, maybe I'm that person at work, but we've all experienced it.
I know. Oh man, it was so great. Yeah,
I like it. But yeah, no, I mean, to me, I thought about it. This is probably a top three Marvel movie for me. Like, I've seen it already three times. I could see it three more and not get tired of it.
Yeah, definitely a top 10 for me, probably top five to your point. I haven't thought through it, but I agree. We did tiers. It's a tier one movie.
No, like, no doubt.
Yeah.
100%. Tier one. So with that, maybe you put a little more thought into it than I did. We were talking about Marvel trilogies because this is a trilogy. And as I thought about it, I'm like, I never thought of these movies as trilogies before, even though it's like Iron Man 1, 2, and 3. There's Captain America, Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America First Avenger, Captain America Winter Soldier next, right? Mm-hmm. And then Captain America Civil War.
Yep.
Like, but because there's so much other stuff going on, I had never really thought of them as trilogies before until you brought it up.
Yeah.
What's sort of your take on like that? What do you think as trilogies go?
I think they're trying to tell a character story arc, but they also have to kind of stand on their own. And then the other degree of difficulty is depending on when they're released,
right?
In actual time, they have to pull in other elements to build the story. And the positive of that, I think, is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is they really didn't need to pull anything else in.
Right.
And so that's what made it a much better movie, in my opinion. What really damaged, in my opinion, Ant-Man 3 Quantumania was I think they had to pull in the whole Kang thing, and it really kind of confused some of the storyline.
I think you're right.
You know, and I'm like, well, it kind of ruined the movie for me a little bit. Not ruined, but just downgraded the movie, I would say. So you have to factor, I think, those things in. But then I think about Civil War, that really a lot of people don't even know that's a Captain America movie.
Right.
Right. You think it's like everybody's like, it's an Avengers movie. I'm like, no, it's a Captain America ending the trilogy. And they did a really good job of it. Actually enhanced the story, the fact that they set up future things around Civil War. And so I guess it just really depends on how well the director and the writers and the producers can bring all those three elements in. You have a character you have to develop. You've got a standalone story that you need to tell. And oh, by the way, you need to pull in these other things because we've got this big phase 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 thing going on. And I think some directors can do a good job and some struggle with it.
And that's, that's where I struggled a little bit with it is like, if you thought of it as a trilogy and I'm thinking of it in my mind, it's like, if you had never seen any Marvel movies or any TV shows ever, and you're like, I'm just going to watch just these three movies. How good of a trilogy is that?
Yeah.
And that's hard. And
And if that's how you say it, then I don't know how you can't rank Guardians number one.
It
because of what you just said.
I agree. It's even though hard to think about because it's what we said at the top of the show, which is how much of their story happens in other movies and in other things. Like, you might be a little confused of like, Groot's this dude and then he burns up and now he's a baby. That's fine. And then he's back and big again. I guess there's not a lot of gaps there, and it's probably because the Guardians stand alone a lot. I actually thought Iron Man might be one of the trilogies that sort of stands on its own also. There's not a lot of intertwining. The middle movie is one that I don't think I've ever watched more than, I think I watched it in the theater and I watched it once at home. But I actually really like Iron Man 3. I know a lot of people aren't huge fans of it, but I think Iron Man 3 is pretty dang good.
Yeah, I'm with you. You and I saw it together, and our initial reaction was we liked it because we liked how they played Mandarin in it. And so I enjoyed it. Yeah, so I actually think that's high up on the list. But I really think when you define trilogy like you did, you can kind of get your arms around Iron Man, and that's pretty much it.
I don't know. I mean, how much of Captain America would you get? Like, because Captain America, great movie, stands alone. Captain America Winter Soldier, don't know.
Yep.
I would have to rethink through that. Captain America Civil War, is that something you have to know a lot about? Maybe you do. Maybe you have to know a lot about, like, the other characters that get pulled into it. You have to at least know about Iron Man. You couldn't watch that without watching an Iron Man movie.
I think you're right. And then, you know, the other trilogy that really isn't MCU but is MCU is the Spider-Man trilogy.
Yeah.
And I like that would probably be number two or number three for me on trilogies, because kind of a story arc to Peter Parker in those.
The other one that occurs to me just for sheer entertainment value, and I don't think have to know what else is going on in the other movies, is Thor. Thor Dark World is largely considered, again, it's always these middle movies, largely considered to be a disappointment. But I think you can watch the first Thor and be wildly entertained, watch Thor Dark World and either like it or not, and then watch Thor Ragnarok and have a ton of fun. And you really don't have to know anything else about the Marvel Universe to have a lot of fun with Thor Ragnarok, even though Hulk appears. Like, kind of, who doesn't know who Hulk is? And you don't have to have seen a previous Hulk movie to know.
Right, right. And and the opposite end of that is I didn't like Thor 2 when I watched it. I mean, I wasn't thoroughly entertained. I was a little disappointed. But then after watching other movies, like as the story went further on Hawkeye and on Black Widow, I went back and watched Thor 2 and enjoyed it more.
I'll probably have to go back and watch that again, because I literally only watched that on a plane.
Right, on a plane? So,
which is a shame, is my kids were so little. I was like, I have no time to watch movies, but I'll watch Thor on this plane while I'm flying across country.
So if you watch it now, especially after the Black Widow movie, Joe, I think you'll appreciate it more, because I did because of that. But to your point, I'm like, do I have to watch other movies and storylines to enjoy this more? Like, that shouldn't it stand on its own? But again, the balance between all the things that we talked about, I think, are important. And so, yeah, I actually moved up Thor 2 in my own personal tiers, because after watching Avengers and more about Black Widow, I was like, okay, now I see why they had to introduce these characters here and make them part of the story, because they weren't going to get their own movie at the time. So they needed to put him in somewhere, and it actually plays pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. So based on your recommendations, I'm probably gonna have to go back and watch Thor Dark World again. But overall, I think we're both like wildly enthusiastic about Guardians 3. If you want to see it again, let me know, because I'm gonna see it again before it's out of theaters, because it's so fun.
I know. I gotta watch it again. There's a bunch of other movies obviously coming up that I want to watch Spider-Man across the Spider-Verse. Oh, but I do need to see that again. So yeah, we'll figure it out.
I could not be more excited for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It comes out 2 days before my birthday. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
I know. Totally. Right.
Well, so thanks for catching up with me on Guardians, Mark. You know, feel free to hit us up on social if you agree, disagree. You guys know how to find us. I'm not going to play our normal exit song as we leave you all, because this was an emotional wrap-up. I mean, like, I think you said you cried 2.5 times. Like, how's a half a time work?
But yeah,
it was an emotional journey. Other than the legendary Star-Lord, apparently we're not sure if we'll see these characters again. And so really, there's only one way to end the show, Mark.
Yes,